We're going to read in the fourth chapter of the book of Revelation. The fourth chapter of the book of Revelation. After this I looked, and behold, a door was opened in heaven, and the first voice which I heard was as it were of a trumpet talking with me, which said, Come up hither, and I will show thee things which must be hereafter. And immediately I was in the Spirit, and, behold, a throne was set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. And he that sat was to look upon like a jasper and a sardine stone, and there was a rainbow round about the throne, in sight like unto an emerald. And round about the throne were 24 seats, and upon the seats I saw 24 elders sitting clothed in white raiment, and they had on their heads crowns of gold. And out of the throne proceeded lightnings and thunderings and voices, and there were 7 lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the 7 spirits of God. And before the throne there was a sea of glass like unto crystal, and in the midst of the throne and round about the throne were 4 beasts full of eyes before and behind. And the first beast was like a lion, and the second beast like a calf, and the third beast had a face as a man, and the fourth beast was like a flying eagle. And the 4 beasts had each of them 6 wings about them, and they were full of eyes within, and they rest not day and night, saying, Holy, holy, holy Lord God Almighty, which was, and is to come. And when these beasts give glory and honor and thanks to him that sat on the throne, who liveth for ever and ever, the 24 elders fall down before him that sat on the throne, and worship him that liveth for ever and ever, and cast their crowns before the throne, saying, Thou art worthy, O Lord, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou hast created all things, and for thy pleasure they are and were created. Not the beautiful reading. One of the most simple and obvious yet important ideas that we need to keep in our mind when we're pondering the book of Revelation, and it is this, that the writer goes up to heaven and tells us what's on up there, comes down to earth, tells us what's going on up there, goes up, goes down, goes up, goes down. It's a case of alternating between scenes above and scenes below. Now your chapters don't decide that, because the first of these chapters that take us up above, chapters 4 and there are 2 of them, chapter 4 and 5. And once you've them read, you're down again on earthly scenes. So far we have been looking at the wonderful vision that John received of the Lord Jesus. Now that may be a heavenly view, I'm not saying it is, but that's certainly lofty anyhow. Then we have those 2 chapters that deal with earthly things, because it's earthly testimony in the 7 churches of Asia. And now we're taken right up, away from the falterings and feelings of humanity, and even the falterings of saints, and we're landed right up into the very highest pinnacle of glory. Now John was not the only one that went up there. You all know that Paul was caught up to the third heaven. And he came back. But the strangest thing about Paul is that he told us so little about what he saw or what he heard. In fact, he wasn't even allowed to communicate to us what he beheld on that wondrous occasion. Thus we have something very unique and distinct here when we have John raptured in spirit to get a look at scenes above. Well, so somebody, isn't it strange when he went up there, he didn't come down here and tell us exactly in the ordinary way that men should tell us exactly what he saw. But he talks about a rainbow, and he talks about living creatures, and he talks about elders, and he talks about stones, precious stones, and sea of glass, and all this kind of thing. You'd wonder he wouldn't have put it so different to what he has done. And that would just be your way of thinking, and maybe mine as well. But you see, you have got to remember that when you begin to tread the courts above, you have no language on your life. You're in your mind. That can't convey that to human beings. So that you just have to be content to hear it described to you in a symbolic way. Objects that you do know about are used to describe things you have never seen and help you to understand them. So instead of the symbols in Revelation being complicated and meant to be confusing, they are the means that the God of heaven and his wisdom has adopted for explaining to us things that you just can't put into ordinary language. That's why the speech called the speech of God. You know right well that that would just give us some idea of its splendor and grandeur and of its value and its preciousness. All that kind of thing. We see that as time goes on. I want you to remember that. You know, if you were describing computers to a little darkie from the back of Africa, you were so bothered, wouldn't you, then? You give your sayings and all the different things that you'd want to tell him, and if you started to give him a line on algebra or something like that, you need a wee lad would look at it. You'd have to use things or something that he would understand. You see, because his mind couldn't take it in. Now we're down here on earth. We've never been in those things above. And we're limited in our apprehension. And thus it's God's great kindness to us that he gives us such views of those things above and describes them in language at least suggestive to our minds and helpful to our thoughts. We've tried to make clear from the start of the Revelation that you needn't be looking for everything in it. Because you see, that's not its purpose. You say, tell us, how is it that the rapture of the saints is never given to us in the book of Revelation? Well, it's not. But mind you, I think we're all agreed that when John was caught up, he was a sort of an illustration of what's going to happen to us all. For he was caught up right up into heaven. And as soon as the door of heaven's open, he hears a voice, come up! Heather, one of these days, dear saints of God, maybe sooner than we think, sooner than perhaps the most of us have an idea of, the same heaven will open, and the same door will be open, and the same voice will be heard, and the same trumpet sound will awake, the dead in their grave, and change will live, we too will go up. Come up, Heather, will be the grand call that we will hear from the Savior Christ. Isn't it well done already? Isn't it? You always have an unsaved one or two in a meeting like this. And we said on Sunday night, and we repeat it, it's a solemn thing for a person to have sat side by side with the Lord's people in Titan and to be parted from them for all eternity and miss heaven and home and glory. You notice this, that immediately he's caught up, he's reminded that what he's going to say and what he's going to record are after these things. Now these things must refer to the conditions in the churches that we were at yesterday evening. And when these things are over, and such testimony is finished, now we're at the time that we're here seeing. That means to say that the saints of this age have been already raptured to heaven. And they have already reached the land of faithless death. They're already in bodies, sitting, as we see in a moment, sitting upon thrones in association with God upon his throne. Now you'll notice that when he has introduced the point, he says, immediately I was in the spirit. I think there's one thing about the Lord's coming, you'll have to agree, that it's going to be quick. Quickly. Of an eye, just a little shadow, a little bit of shudder of your eyelid, in the twinkling of an eye, so immediately, I was in the spirit. That is, of course, that he was at rapture. He was lifted up in a spiritual way. We're not suggesting he went up physically, but he was entranced to see heaven and all that that means. And then he says, as he looked up, behold, a throne was set in heaven. And give I like that. Let me say much to you. It must be very, very comforting. This great book was written for the comfort of struggling saints to realize there's a throne set in heaven. Ain't you nothing shaky up there? All the storms that go on down below, you know, don't shake that throne. Every affliction that may come amongst the sons of men, and all the great ones that rise upon earth and play their little part on the stage and go off it again, they'll not interfere with that throne. Stay there forever. God on his eternal throne. I think we should appreciate that. Then again, you will notice that that was set in heaven on one set on. Now, wouldn't you have expected that? I really read the people at breaking a book on what people would have expected in the book of Revelation. It's not in it. You'd have expected him to describe in detail the glorious person seated on a throne. Now, wouldn't you expect that? But you see, he doesn't do that. He tells you there was one on it. It's not vacant. It's not empty. And he tells you the one that was on it, and strange it might seem to us, he was to look upon the jasper and the sardine stone. Oh, you say, what does that mean? Now that is pondered this very carefully. These are purplish and reddish colors. We're not going to be too precise. You always watch when you're listening to me that I keep away from all this very technical ideas of handling the Bible. We just keep fairly clear of all that is dogmatic and exact. But we give you the substance and leave you to meditate upon it later. These are brilliant color. That is the startling reddishness of the throne and the throne set. Then the child would ask out, it's a wonder. It's a wonder that he didn't give us the colors without mentioning stone. Why did he say stone? All of you know too well that if you had dyes of any kind, they'll soon be faded. I know they're even better at the dyeing than they used to be. But even with the course of time, the most of things fade. You just need to turn up some of you even for ladies. Of course, you don't keep them that long now. It used to be you turned up your coat and you could see that just beneath the lapel was maybe slightly different, but on the bed, you know. And people would notice that. But mind you, I tell you, the colours and stones don't fade. They're permanent. And so when God is being revealed to us, he's being revealed to us in those colours that are permanent, that can't be changed, that can't be altered, that can't be washed away, that cannot be destroyed, they'll be left forever. Thus the character of God is permanent. Sorry, and just. These stones, most of you know, they're used in the priestly garments, and you can also get them in the foundation of the house, but we'll never get to it, the Lord will, and if you keep coming, we'll maybe land you in the city four square somewhere, and we'd be glad to see you come to hear about it. But what I want you to understand is this, that these are precious stones that are sparkling with grandeur and glory, and revealing the character of a throne sitter. But then you see, to soften those red colors, for God is always, you dear babies that watch flowers, you know that. He always puts the green alongside the bright colors, not red. He can soften the brighter colors and give them a greenish tinge around them, not red. And the Louis Gerd was selling flowers seed one day to a customer on the manager, in fact, I know the man that was in charge, he overheard her saying to the woman, and she says, what kind of colour of flowers are these? Oh, she says, they'll be blue, grey, green, and so I know where all the colours. And she says, tell her, some nice customer, don't you talk about green flowers, they're not too plentiful. And you see, because it's the foliage, the leaves that are around them, that are usually green, and not the flower itself. You see how God has his whole character. There's the rainbow, reminding us of his covenant keeping, his interest in man. The throne, you see. All the stability of it. And then, the rainbow round of covenant keeping God. So you know when it happened. With Noah, wasn't it? The bow was put in the shaft. And you know, it's most important to see the bow on this occasion, the rainbow. Because we're going to have lightnings and thunders in a moment or two. What was in the Eschat, you see, it's well to think that while there is his judgment about to burst upon the world, and God getting his throne ready for judgment, he's still the covenant keeping God. You know, we're filled with this. Because you see, everybody nearly lets you down just when you need them most. And you put confidence in man, even in rulers and all that, and you find that just let you down in a critical moment. But the God who sits upon the throne, he's one who will be absolutely dependable. And he will never disappoint his people, nor he will never in any day fail in keeping his agreements and agreements with the sons of men. Now you notice that round about the throne. I'm not going to give you a lesson in English. I might need one myself. But I'm going to show you just in a glance, but I'm not going to go into detail. I just give it. It's an interesting study. So notice the different prepositions that are used to indicate relationship to the throne. You have round about it, and you have different prepositions used. I couldn't quote them, I wouldn't try to, I haven't opened them in the Bible, but they're very interesting. Now here we have in the midst of the throne, and round about the throne. And round about the throne, and upon seats I saw 24 elders sitting, clothed in white raiment, and they had on their heads crowns of gold. Now, you might think that when you're reading about these, that they were sitting on earthly seats. But the idea is they're sitting on thrones. I think you will see that from some of the other translations. The idea is that here are people on thrones, and they're sitting in connection and in association with the throne sitter. And there are 24 of them. And you will notice that they're clothed in white linen. I think we're very clear about that. It says that they were 24, and their clothes in white raiment, and they had on their heads crowns of gold. Now, what are you going to make of that? And for instance, the first question a child would ask right away is, why are they called desert? Well, does that not indicate, if it indicates anything, their maturity? They have come to maturity. You know that word perfect that you get in your epistles that you maybe have some arguments with in the Bible reading. It's really to come to maturity. How do you reach it? Further develop. And they're in white garments. Of course, that would indicate that they are absolutely pure. And they are in suitable attack for the very presence of God. Oh, I like that. Where not a spot his eye can trace, in us true lost ones, saved by grace. You see, before I go any further, I told you who the 24 elders are. They're the redeemed. Because you see, they have crowns on their head. They don't be the soul for sensible. Angels don't win crowns. You know that. They are not called upon to face the problems that the saints face. And they're not in the word of crowns the way you and I will be. But here are the redeemed in their glorified bodies, seen in vision, of course, associated with a throne, and crowned with crowns upon their head. Let us know that the struggles over, that the contest is ended, that the prizes have been given out, and we see later on the people very proud and recognized it. They'll bow in worship and adoration in the presence of the God who hath awarded them these high honors in his church. 24. You see, all these questions would be asked. Why elders? We've answered that. Why are they in white garments? We've answered that. And why are they crowned? We've answered that. Now, reply 24 of them. I judge the answer goes to the fact that when David was dividing up the priesthood in the old economy, he divided it into 24, and each of those, as it were, groups had to do their service as the time went past during the year. And thus there was the 24 courses of the priests. That's just a little hint, you see. The 24 is just to let us know that these elders represent the saints in their priestly capacity in glory. Now, let us stop a minute. I hope you all believe that the priesthood of Christ is eternal. That is, you see, but I not need the high priest when I go to heaven. You will, brother. Just excuse me for contradicting you. You see, but I thought you only needed the priest to have you through time, and when time is over, you'll be done with him, and I don't believe that. I don't even need the high priest as the great leader of that priestly throng of adoring worshippers and glory. We still value Christ in his eternal priesthood. He thou art a priest forever. Don't let us subtract anything from that. That's his eternal priesthood. And that means to say, dear souls, that if there's a high priest for all eternity, and we've been told repeatedly that he has made us unto our God a kingdom of priests, or kings and priests, as it may be a little different in the second reference in Revelation. Anyhow, we are priests. Now look, dear saints of God, get this feeling in your mind now. You did not become a priest when your brother in the assembly, if you didn't want. The moment you put your trust in Christ, your priesthood began. And don't forget that priesthood that began the moment you got saved, it's going to last forever. So that in heaven and in at home with my blessed Lord, that wonderful, wonderful privilege will be met to offer to God an eternal note of praise and thanksgiving as one of his redeemed and ransomed priests. You see, if Christ's priesthood, the great high priest, or the great priest and the high priest, if it's eternal, it's quite obvious that his own children will equally have an eternal priesthood. Hope you, dear young believers, know something about the privilege of your priesthood, and that you know what it is to enter the sanctuary. And in your own simple way, but in your heart, warm hearted way, offer to the Lord the praise and the thanks that he is worthy to receive. You see, our priesthood will continue forever. I suggest that is indicated to us in the 24 elders, or the 24 elders on their thrones, and their clothes in white raiment, and these crowns, and so on. Now, I should say that in the old economy, the priest had a golden plate across his brow, and the ordinary priest, they just wore a little turban, a little scepter, if you would call it. But instead of a cap, we will have a crown. And instead of the great high priest having just a plate upon his forehead, he will have a crown of glory that he will wear forever. As we sing it so constantly, behold the Lamb with glory crown. And so on. Now you'll notice that verse 5 lets us know that out of that throne are proceeding lightnings, thunderings, and voices. And there were seven lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the seven spirits of God. Now, somebody, you must stop now, I'm getting a wee bit really, well, that's a kind of heavy stuff. I don't want that too often. Not just getting a bit big now. Yes, now look here, though. If Jonah's got a look at the throne on this occasion, he's getting a look at the throne in its attitude that it will adopt when the church is wrong. That is, it's getting ready for the judgments that are going to be inflicted upon the face of the earth. And that's illustrated to us with lightnings and thunderings and voices. Very simple, very obvious. Anybody knows that the flashing light, the flashing lightning and the noise of the thunder has ever been an indication of the voice of God. And as the Psalm of the 29th book so wonderfully, it describes the glory of God in the heavens. Now you'll notice that there are torches here, or lamps, I think it's a new version. Seven lamps. Now we've been on lampstands in the previous, haven't we? Now this is not the same idea. The lampstand that we were reading about last night is a light for the inside of the heart. It's a light for inside. The lamp that is referred to here is a torch for standing outside with. It's for, we might say, the outer region, indicating to us that what we have here are the threatenings and the judgments and the flashings of lightning and the terrible times that are coming on the world, and God's throne is ready for action in that domain. Then we find that when you have that described, how beautiful it is, and before the throne there was a sea of glass. It's not only bring you back into your thinking now, without being too awkward. You see, we have those bright colours, that red and purple silver, and in the first amendment, the nice green coming in. The milder colours. Now, don't you see, we have lightnings and thunderings. I'm to somebody, and along with that, the storm. Surely, the sea will be all turned up. It was these 30 days, about Fort Stewart or somewhere there. It was quite rough. You see, you see it now? You know, there's a wonderful combination on at the throne of God, because this is before the throne, of his ability to judge and his willingness to judge, and yet the calmness of his presence in the midst of the throne. You know what, we're going to do anything big or exciting, we all get raised up, don't we? If you're going to do something big, man, you're home, you'd get all, not all into the whole flurry about it, wouldn't you? You'd get all excited about it. See, God can do his matters so calm. He can have a sea of glass and the flashing lightnings above the throne and round the throne. He doesn't need to let the whole of the servants down below interfere with the calmness of heaven above. Why, a sea of glass with somebody. Sure, you couldn't be it in that. No, there's going to be no more sea, whatever that means. We'll have to have a look at that when we get to chapter 21. And Mr. Hoffman used to say, I don't know how the ladies will do, for they all let you get to the seaside. I don't know how they'd be happy in heaven. I don't say that, but he seemed to think they all wanted to get to the seaside. We mustn't forget that there are millions in the world never saw the sea. Living in the center parts of big, vast countries that never managed to get to the seaside. There's only little people and islands, you know, little unimportant little places like Northern Ireland. We can go to the seaside any day you wish. And go and watch his way. Now, a sea of glass is indicating to us that it's not for washing. You see, it's everything taking the place of the labor in the old economy, just as the throne takes the place of the ark and the cherubim and so on. And the sea of glass is not for bathing, but it's to reflect. You see, acts like a mirror that you see yourself in. So that the creatures that will be there, all those redeemed ones, will, as it were, see their beauty and see their glory. It will be all capable of being looked upon. You know, sometimes, my dear, those who are going to be getting proud. And yeah, the sweetest creatures that you ever looked at, you know, you saw them another 50 years, that seems to be real. The old woman that somebody gave her photograph, and then she hadn't had glasses for her life came up to that, and she got a pair of glasses on. And then they showed her a photograph. Oh, she says, a humbling sight. You see, when she got the glasses and saw the thing, it just really, let her see the face, how humiliating it was to view her own photograph. Oh dear child of God, every time you can look into the sea of glass and the beauty of the Savior on your very cheek. I think that's the thing. All the same and every wonder.
I will not be surprised at beholding his beauty. What to think that he put his beauty on us.
And that we will wear it. And we will like her. For we shall see him as he is. Then you will notice that there are seven spirits before the throne. See, this is very puzzling to many of the believers. They say, surely there are not seven holy spirits. No, they are not.
But when the Bible wants to show something in its fullness, something in its wonder, its might, it very often introduces the word, the number seven. Of course, you see, that's the number of perfection. And he is spiritual power to perfection. Not much use of having thunderings and lightnings and voices if there's no power to carry it out. Little point in warning people that nothing can happen, but oh, the spiritual power of the Lord to carry out all that is intended by the throne.
Now then we come to, and I mustn't speak too late, come to verse number 6, and round about the throne in the midst of the throne. We're getting right in the midst of the throne. And round about the throne were four beasts, ruled of eyes before and behind. Oh, so some of the beasts, living creatures. Not the same with the word beast now in chapter 13. Everybody points that out to you. These are living creatures. And you say, what are they? They're in the midst of the throne. And they're round about the throne. And they are very closely united in their movements, actions, and thoughts with the elder. And I submit to you that they are setting forth and before us. They redeemed in another aspect. That is, when I think of the elders, I think of the redeemed, as I've already pointed out, in their priestly capacity. When I think of the four living creatures, I think of the believers in their royal aspect and in their executive aspect. You see, there's another side to it. You know, your blessed Lord is not only a priest, but he's a king. And he's a king forever. And you will have to remember that he has made great promises to us that we'll be in his kingdom and that the saints will judge the world. And there will be in our hands responsibilities in connection with the administration of that kingdom. Now we see that coming out in the 74 square if we get that link. And you keep coming to the meetings. We ponder that as well. Now there are four living creatures. Anybody who studies these will easily link them right away in their minds with the cherubim of the old economy. The cherubim of glory. Described for us in the prophecy of Ezekiel, and so on. And there's a somebody, isn't it strange, that the writer tells us the way that they're going at this. There's one looks like a lion, and there's another one, and he looks like a calf or an ass. And there's another one, and he looks like a man. And there's another one, and he looks like an eagle. You wonder, maybe you'd say that's a strange sight, isn't it? Now, is that not to let us see those four living creatures, that they have certain features as to their aspect and as to their responsibility? As lion, as the king of the forest, don't you know that? And that is the symbol quite often in your Bible of absolute power. And that's something they will possess. And then you will notice that the calf, of course, that always reminds you of the ox for labor. They know what it is to have labor. They are wearing that character. And the face of a man would indicate they have intelligence and they have a spirit understanding that the creature, other creatures haven't. And they will also have the wings of an eagle. They'll be able to soar up high. And they'll be able to see things from a distance. Many of you, child of God, even I were never to go beyond this. There's a wealth of teaching lying around here for all of us to get to understand. How are we getting on, as it were, even now, apart from what we'll be in the future? Are we really feeling the might and strength that the eternal God would have us to enjoy? Are we knowing something of the patient labor indicated by the ark? Are we spiritually intelligent? Can we look into things and soar into heights and apprehend things that others know nothing at all about? I take it that when the great apostle Paul was praying on earnestly that the saints would apprehend and grasp and grasp and grasp. You know, if you had him on one of your prayer meetings, I suppose you'd wonder what he was praying about. Or he wouldn't be talking about merely, oh, that's not too well. I'm not saying you shouldn't pray for people that are not well. But he was always burdened about the fact, that the saints would apprehend. He wanted to have us eagle eyes, as it were. He wanted us to have a knowledge of things that are above the ordinary creatures on the face of the earth and revel in them. We might as well enjoy them in time, for we're going to enjoy them through our God eternally. Then again, you'll notice that they have six fingers. Answer somebody, what's that for? Well, that's they have six wings. And the wings, apparently, we're not too dramatic here. The wings possibly are flying away. They're not just, you know, some people always in a hurry, but they don't know where they're going. But they're wings and they're flying and they know where they're going and they see everywhere. You know, there's nothing so unbecoming as a child of the light staggering with earth and calling you where he's going. God would want us to be truly aware. Absolutely understanding. You see, they have eyes before and behind. That is to say, they can look aware in front of them. And they can look away back behind them. You see, the child of God has a wonderful mind. I revel in the thought of it, you know. We're hinting at it the other night here that a poor fisherman like Peter would know so much and would understand so much. Oh, to think that a poor little human being could have thoughts in his mind that the wiseacres knew nothing about, and could pick lights and see things and look ahead in a way that nobody else in the world or save can possibly be aware of. And they are totally in the dark to all these things. Let us get a wee bit of help along this line. Dear young brother, are you satisfied just to sit and look like the poor animal all just round your feet? Can't see past the boundary of Ballymena? Can't see past the ceiling of the house you live in? Surely God would want us to have vision for that which lies ahead. I love the hymn, I sing it and must quote it and get on at it because I like it. The eternal glories gleam afar, to nerve my faint endeavor, so now to watch to work toward, and then to rest forever. Yes, these living creatures, they're full of eyes. They have absolute apprehension of all that's going on. They're just made again perceive what's about them. Am I judge that the saints in glory will be fully conversant with the mind of God and all that he's doing, and they'll be absolutely clear on the different stages of operation of his almighty heart, so that they will be not only there like so many slabs as it were, but intelligently and absolutely understanding all that's involved in the program of the Almighty. It's great that he lets us into his secrets, isn't it? There's some men on earth and you'd never hear her limit. They'll tell you nothing. They'll tell you nothing. Maybe you're working for them, they'll hardly tell you what they have in mind. It's just like you're sort of a machine, you know. You just do that and that's it all. While you're doing it, you hardly know. But God will have heaven filled with spiritually intelligent souls that will apprehend all that he's doing and appreciate it and go along with him in the doing it. On the rest of day or night, I know what you think about heaven. Rest of the saints above, don't you sing about it? And you just think it's going to be like one of those big palatial palaces where you have all the easy chairs and nice places to lounge about in and roll about in and rest and rest and rest and rest and rest and rest. But you're going to be disappointed, dear brother. God's not inactive himself, and he wouldn't want to see his family acting differently to himself. He is very active in all that he's doing, and he doesn't want you to be lounging about in time, and he certainly will have no place for you lounging about in heaven. There'll be rest of day in it. Well, because there's no night there, you see. They'll have endless energy. They caught that. You know, this is what I'm going to say, kills us men, but it really matters there, doesn't it, really, how to preach it. You know right well that the energy begins to fade. You've noticed it, I suppose, even as the years go by. Those who listen to us know right well the time comes when we can see a fading of our energy. And you know right well, dear brother, now be honest about it. Maybe now when you sit down at night to read, and before you know who you are, your head's beginning to shift. It's not right. And you get older, you get worse off. And you wonder that you're getting so sluggish and so slow. Working every bit as hard, but getting less done, as the old man said. But you see, here's a place where we never get back. And weariness will be on you. And I sometimes would love to have more energy and more ability to carry on what I'd like to do. But you see, here's a place where it will never be deficient. Now, the day and night under Christ, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come. That is to say, they are acclaiming to God and announcing that word God and reminding each other as those angelic beings or those flying beings do in the sixth chapter of Isaiah. They are telling one another and telling God of his holiness. You see, even in carrying out judgment that's going to happen in the world, in all that he's doing, God's holiness never once thought. Absolute holiness characterizes him. And they give glory and honor and thanks to him that sat on the throne who liveth forever and ever. Now look at verse 10. And the 24 elders fall down before him that sat on the throne and worship him. You see, they're both doing the same thing. And they're worshiping him. And they forever and cast their crowns before the throne. I wonder what's the idea of that. Now maybe you've never pondered that. What's the idea of casting their crowns before the throne? Now you know right well that if you're given a reward for anyone, suppose you were a masterpiece at school, and you come out first, and then you get in some schools you get a little reward home with you. A kind of maybe a token to indicate that you were the best scholar and so on. Now wouldn't it be most unbecoming to look at the principal and throw it down at his feet? Now you say, that's a very strange type of student. And if you had been successful in some other career, and they had awarded your praise, even those firms that run around with the motor bicycles, you know, they get a lot of branches of some log or some put around their neck or something like that. Well, even they wouldn't throw that down. Well, I'm sensible when I say that. Lord, at least wear it for a wee while. I know it's a lot of bushes and they throw it over eventually. But, I mean, at the beginning, they wouldn't do the best of that. I hope there's no Christian here would ever think, won't look at those fruits. Do you have them? They're silly enough, but they're just going to look at them. They're not the business of any Christian that ever dreamed of seeing those boys risking their life for to show up by their feet and so on. But you see, they wouldn't throw that down. No, no. Yet here, crown upon their head, golden crown, and they're casting the next step. What are they doing that for? Is it that they despise the crown? Ah, the crown. Move it so. Is it as they're unappreciative of what is the honors that have been heaped upon them? Ah, the crown. You see, what they look, they just seem to feel like this. I'm wearing a crown, what I never deserved. I've been rewarded, what I never, never deserved. I feel all that I have should have gone to the one who gave it to me.
where it's not exactly worded enough when in the passage it remains one of what David said, of thine own have I given it. Where is a man to stand up on the hall and say, well, I'm not of what the Lord gives me, at least I earn it. When you see that great laborer, the Apostle Paul, and when he looked at himself now, he says, yes, I labored more abundantly than they all, yet not I, but the grace of God, that was with me. You see, the grace of God. I wonder, can we learn tonight that anything we ever had or ever will have, we must trace it all to the great fount of grace that has been flowing like a river, and realize that we never deserved any reward from our God, and we never deserved any appreciation from Himself. Why the Lord would ever say to any of us, I value your service, I value your sacrifices, I value the life you live for me. We can't understand it. But in our own estimation, we feel so unworthy. That's why they put their crowns on us. And they will say to the throne sitter, to God be the glory. Great things He has done. Dear child of God, whatever you do, I don't think I need to tell you. I hope I don't. Never get. Now I know it's a week that will do it anyway. Not too bothersome to some of us, for if I live into the crowd, at least that's an idea. Live into the crowd. When did you go home from a meeting, Father, and you were really satisfied? Well, as you should. When did you ever even teach a Sunday school class and you went home feeling on my back was really well done today? When did you speak to the assembly and you thought you did it well? Well, do you show whatever ability you have? And you hope you have ability. You were not jealous. No need to be. Well, remember, it's grace. Don't force the past. Why I should be here tonight, you know, is the one you have. At least it's my one. They created a little country there. Outside Europe. And I'm sure those who taught me in day school never thought the day would come. And folk in Palomino, with all its great privileges and great importance, would ever be listening to a preacher telling them what the Bible has to say. You see, grace is not enough. Yet our crowns, even we haven't got them yet. But anything that we have from God is a flame of the stick and give the glory over to Him who has done so great wonders. What would it like for your soul to be in His presence? Accept from that pierced hand a reward for our service that really we couldn't have done but for His grace that enabled us to do. And to appreciate His wonder in not only snatching us from burning hell, but bringing us to the highest standing of His glory. May God help us to appreciate this. Not a very long time to get up there. You'll be able to check on whether I'm raising up. You'll be able to see exactly whether I'm tapping it correctly or not. I'm not saying I'm dogmatic. You notice I don't be dogmatic. I give you the promise to do this just as I see it. And I think it fits in fairly well. I enjoy it anyhow in my own simple mind. And I hope it will be helpful to you as well. May the Lord bless His good children.